You notice your wife, maybe 45, has changed. The stable woman you married seems gone. She's suddenly booking spontaneous solo trips to Miami or Las Vegas. Her social media, once full of family events, is now a curated feed of solo pictures, often in new, expensive, and revealing outfits. She's dismissive of you, almost irritated by your presence. You tell yourself it's a midlife crisis or female empowerment. I counsel men in your exact position every week. Let me tell you what is really happening. She's running from a biological reality, and she is attempting to use a younger man as the escape route. This isn't the story she tells herself, and it is definitely not the story she's telling you. The story she tells herself is one of empowerment, of reclaiming her desirability, of finally choosing herself. But this narrative is a dangerous mask. This phenomenon is almost never about finding new love or experiencing better intimacy. It's a raw, panicked response to one thing: terror. It is the terror of aging, the terror of invisibility, and the cold realization that her biological prime is over. What society sells as empowerment is, in clinical reality, a desperate flight from mortality. It's not about the younger man himself. It's about what his youth represents. The women who end up in my office aren't energized. They are profoundly exhausted. Which brings us to the hidden economy driving this entire dynamic. This isn't a financial economy. It's an economy of emotional desperation. After 20 years of marriage, the stability she craved now feels like stagnation. The husband she knows, the man she built a life with, has become predictable. She feels invisible. So she isn't seeking a new person. She is seeking a new feeling. She wants to feel the rush of being seen again, the thrill of the novel, the validation of being desired by someone who represents the very thing she is losing, youth. The younger man is the ultimate status symbol of vitality. In practice, this looks like emotional consumption. She is not connecting with him. She is using his attention as a human energy drink, a temporary fix to feel alive. She is desperate for proof that she still matters. If this feels familiar, that's your sign. This belief that the connection is mutual is the fatal flaw, and it sets up the most devastating part of the dynamic, the romantic asymmetry. Here is the brutal truth of that asymmetry. The 45-year-old woman is playing a game of connection. The 25-year-old man is playing a game of opportunity. She interprets his attention as profound, believing he sees the real her beneath the marriage. He interprets her attention as access to better dinners, a more comfortable lifestyle, and physical intimacy without the demands of a partner his own age. She is investing emotionally. He is extracting experientially. She's talking about shared values. He's appreciating the no-strings-attached benefits. She is analyzing their text messages for deeper meaning. He is wondering if she'll cover their next vacation. In simpler terms, she thinks she's found a partner. He knows he's found a sponsor, which leads directly to the most toxic inversion of this entire arrangement. The script flips the moment the transaction becomes explicit. It starts small. She feels generous, powerful, paying for expensive dinners, concert tickets, or a weekend away. But soon, the dynamic shifts. He casually mentions his car payment is late, or that he needs a new laptop for school. Suddenly, she is no longer just the desirable, experienced woman. She is the solution to his financial deficits. I see this constantly. One client, a 48-year-old dentist, started by helping her 26-year-old musician boyfriend with his demo tape. 6 months later, she was covering his entire rent and utilities. She had become the traditional male provider, the very role she may have resented in her own marriage. She isn't his partner, she's his patron. And she hates herself for it, because she knows his attention is now tied to her bank account, not her being. This is the ultimate trap. The woman seeking validation for who she is becomes valued only for what she provides. She wanted to feel desired. Instead, she feels necessary. This creates a profound resentment, not just toward him for being a burden, but toward herself for creating the dynamic. The stability she fled in her marriage is replaced by the constant anxiety that if the money stops, the affection stops, and the sums become staggering. I worked with a client who drained $80,000 from her retirement fund to invest in her 29-year-old partner's vague tech startup. He disappeared 3 weeks after the final transfer. She called it supporting his dream. He simply saw it as the cost of his time, a cost she was willing to pay to ignore the one thing she cannot change, the inconvenient biological reality. This biological reality is the inconvenient truth that modern culture pretends doesn't exist. Society tells the 45-year-old woman she is in her prime, but the mating marketplace operates on cold, hard biology. A 45-year-old man with status and resources is often perceived as gaining value. He is seen as distinguished. He can often date younger women without societal judgment. But the 45-year-old woman faces a brutal double standard. Her peak biological and fertility value, which is the currency the younger man is instinctively drawn to, is decades behind her. This is not a cultural critique, it is a biological fact. The very empowerment narrative that encourages this pursuit is a denial of this reality. She is fighting gravity. And this fight doesn't just create an age gap, it creates a massive life gap, leading to the inevitable collapse of compatibility. Beyond the financial strain and the biological mismatch, the life stage gap is the true relationship killer. Her daily concerns are rooted in decades of responsibility, managing a retirement portfolio, the complex logistics of her own children's university applications, and the maintenance of an executive-level career. She is worried about her legacy. He is navigating a completely different world. The anxiety of a car lease, the interpersonal drama of his roommates, and the abstract desire to find himself. In practice, this looks like total conversational incompatibility. There is no shared ground. She is stressed about equity. He is stressed about which friend is dating whom. This isn't a partnership, it's a mentorship, and she's paying for the privilege. The chasm is simply too wide, and she doesn't just feel older. She begins to feel like a financial administrator for his developing life, which is profoundly unromantic. Then there is the physical and social energy gap, which is non-negotiable. Her definition of a great night has evolved, perhaps a high-end restaurant, a meaningful conversation with peers, and being in bed by 10:30 p.m. to manage her energy for a high-stakes life. His definition of a great night is just beginning at 10:30 p.m. Loud music, crowded venues, and the raw physical stamina to stay out until 3 a.m. If this feels familiar, that's the disconnect. It's not a simple preference, it's a biological reality. She cannot keep up with his social energy without damaging her own health, and he is fundamentally bored by her lifestyle. This forces a toxic choice. Either she exhausts herself, pretending to be 25, feeling ridiculous and out of place among his friends who see her as the older woman, or she stays home, alone, festering with resentment for him having the very vitality that attracted her. The final unscalable wall is family, and this is the part most people get wrong. She often has children who are closer in age to him than she is. The introduction, if it ever happens, is a moment of pure, undiluted humiliation. He is not a new dad. He is the guest who her children instinctively disrespect, or worse, pity. They don't see a partner, they see an opportunist, and they lose respect for their mother, seeing her as a fool in the grip of a crisis. But the true deadlock, the non-negotiable endpoint, is the future. He may theoretically still want a biological family of his own, a future she simply, biologically, cannot provide. She is in the phase of launching children. He hasn't even started. This incompatibility is absolute. It is the biological checkmate. And when the relationship inevitably collapses under this weight, she cannot blame biology or compatibility. She must find a scapegoat. And that scapegoat is almost always the husband she left behind. This is the psychological exit ramp. When the fantasy collapses under the weight of financial ruin and social incompatibility, the cognitive dissonance is too much to bear. She cannot admit, "I have destroyed my life, my finances, and my family in a desperate flight from my own mortality." The ego cannot sustain that level of direct accountability. Therefore, a scapegoat must be found. Logically, the blame should fall on the young man or the societal facilitators who sold her the lie. But emotionally, the target is, and always was, the husband. He becomes the single point of blame for the unhappiness that preceded the affair. His stability is reframed as control. His predictability is reframed as boring. He is the perfect scapegoat precisely because he is the mirror, the living reminder of the 20 years she is trying to erase. He is the first casualty in her war against time, leaving behind an inevitable wasteland, a post-trauma that she and the facilitators must face. The fantasy always shatters, and it shatters into a three-part wasteland. The first loss is the lover. The relationship ends the moment it becomes inconvenient for him, the moment the money dries up, or the moment a more viable, younger partner appears. He was never in it for the long-term commitment. He was in it for the experience, the access, and the financial subsidy. He moves on, completely unscarred, his youth intact, often viewing her as a crazy story to tell his friends. He is, in effect, a hit and run, and she is the casualty left on the side of the road, having paid for the privilege of the collision. The profound connection she perceived was merely a successful transaction he has now concluded, leaving her to face the wreckage alone. The second loss is the husband she abandoned. While she was living her fantasy, he was processing the reality of her betrayal. He was not waiting in standby. He was healing, rebuilding, and reassessing. Often the husband moves on with a quiet dignity, finding a new partner who values the very things the wife discarded: stability, loyalty, and a shared future. By the time the wife, humbled and ruined, attempts to return, she finds the door is not just closed, it's locked. The man she reframed as boring or controlling has built a new, stable life without her. The mirror she tried to destroy has simply removed itself from the wall, leaving her with only her own reflection. The third and most devastating loss is the loss of self. This is the true post-trauma. After the lover is gone and the husband has moved on, she is left completely alone, but as a depleted version of her former self. She is older. She is financially devastated, often having drained her retirement, her savings, or even gone into debt. Her social standing is in ruins as friends and family recoil from the collateral damage of her choices. Her children have lost respect for her, seeing her not as empowered, but as selfish and foolish. She is now forced to face the very mortality she tried to escape, but without a partner, without a support system, and without financial security. The humiliation is total. She did not arrive at this delusion alone. She was enabled, she was facilitated by a culture that profits from this exact fantasy. The primary facilitator is social media and celebrity culture, which relentlessly sells the cougar narrative. Her algorithm feeds her images of 50-year-old actresses with 25-year-old partners, branding it as empowerment and defying aging. She confuses this curated marketing, often a PR arrangement, with reality. She sees the highlight reel, not the transaction. She applies this Hollywood script to her suburban life, expecting a different outcome, and is shocked when the script turns out to be a tragedy. She was consuming a product, not a reality. The second group of facilitators are closer, often in her own social circle. These are her enabling friends, often other women in the same stage of life, equally terrified of their own irrelevance. When she announces her brave decision, they become a toxic echo chamber. You deserve to be happy. It's your time. He was holding you back. They cheer her on, not because it's a wise decision, but because her delusion validates their own desperate hopes. They are not friends. They are co-conspirators in her self-destruction. This is often amplified by permissive feel-good therapy, where a therapist afraid to confront simply validates her feelings while she burns her entire life to the ground. And this is what the facilitators, the media, and her friends never address. The fundamental non-negotiable mismatch that guaranteed this failure from the start. Even in her fantasy, the mature woman is seeking commitment. She wants the younger man to choose her, to validate her as a desirable long-term partner, proving her value. But the younger man is, by his very nature, seeking options. He is in a biological phase of exploration, and the last thing he wants is to be locked down by a partner who is 20 years his senior, often financially needy after her divorce, and biologically incapable of offering him a future family. She wants permanence from a temporary asset. He wants experience without entanglement, which brings us to the final, unavoidable prescription. So, what is the clinical prescription? It is the one nobody wants to hear, yet it is the only one that works. Stop running. This is the advice. The empowerment narrative that society sells is the poison. A radical private acceptance of the truth is the only antidote. The truth is that you cannot perform your way out of your life stage. You cannot buy, date, or surgically alter your way back to 25. The attempt to do so is the source of the pathology. This prescription is about facing the mirror, not as an enemy, but as a biological fact. It is not giving up. It is the ultimate act of regaining control. It's about trading the exhausting, short-term, public performance of vitality for the long-term, quiet strength of internal reality. This is the hard truth that your enabling friends, your permissive therapist, and your social media feed will never tell you because their business model depends on your delusion. This leads to the bifurcation, the final choice, which is a clear distinction between a partner and a symptom. The husband she left, the one who became the scapegoat, the one who represented boring stability, was the permanent asset. He was the equity in her life, the shared history, the man who had proven he was willing to weather the actual storms with her. The younger lover, by contrast, was a temporary asset, a high-cost, high-risk rental. He was not a partner. He was a symptom of her terror, a human analgesic. The only path to recovery is to stop treating symptoms and address the disease, which is the denial of time. She must accept that the temporary validation she received was just an expensive, high-interest loan on her future happiness, and the bill has now inevitably come due. We must use a metaphor here because the logic is absolute. This struggle is like fighting gravity. Denying the biological reality of aging and the marketplace realities that come with it is not brave. It is futile. You can jump, you can flap your arms, you can believe you are flying, fueled by the cheers of your facilitators. But gravity, the hard, immovable law of reality, is always waiting. It does not care about your feelings, your desires, your narrative, or your empowerment. It just is. The fantasy is the brief, thrilling moment of weightlessness. The ground, the post-trauma wasteland, the financial ruin, the humiliation, is the inevitable impact. True strength is not defying this law. It is building a life that respects it, using that solid ground as a foundation, not as an enemy. This, then, is the ultimate choice, the path of fantasy or the path of reality. One choice is to remain a perpetual consumer of a cultural lie, fueled by social media and enablers, which leads to guaranteed emotional, social, and financial ruin. This path ends in becoming the woman we all see and pity, older, alone, financially depleted, and defined by her desperation. The other choice is the harder, quieter path, the acceptance of the dignity of her age, the commitment to rebuilding her life based on truth, and the discovery of a strength that does not require external validation from someone half her age. It is the choice to finally stop running from her own mortality and decide what she is running to. The evidence for this is everywhere, and it's not just me who sees it. And now I turn it over to you. For the men watching, have you witnessed this exact pattern? Have you seen a stable marriage, a stable man, sacrificed at the altar of this fantasy? Have you seen the financial ruin and the humiliation that inevitably follows? For the women watching, perhaps women who have walked this very path and come out the other side, what was the real cost? What is the reality that the facilitators refuse to talk about? Share your evidence in the comments below. The truth is that this false narrative of empowerment is not building women up. It is destroying stable families, and it is time we spoke about it openly.